At first, it didn't work. Then a website reboot quadrupled the business.
About a year and a half in, I felt, this is good. This is where I want my website to be. And a friend of mine who is a web designer came up to me and told me, no offense, but your website is not good at all. Of course, because he's a web designer. But he said, no, the presence that you're putting out there into the world isn't reflecting the level of service that you're offering. So good sales pitch for him, because I ended up hiring him and he did my website over. 2 months after my site launched, my business quintupled.
Managing a lawsuit on the cloud when you're not even a lawyer.
We strive to keep top of mind. When someone has a litigation, the first person they want to call is Claralegal, and we're going to help them out. We're going to find them the best vendor for the best price and the best value, and they're going to have a successful outcome.
Video games that are fun for the kids and help keep them healthy.
I don't have a kid, but I've heard parents think about their kids all the time. It's the same thing. You're always thinking about, what can I do to make it better? How can I get revenue faster? How can I get to the next round? How can I expand? How can I scale? I think it's worth taking the risk and the cut pay and salary to do what you love.
You're ready to say, let's do this for your weekend pickup game, but you don't have a gym to use. Here's someone to call.
We partner with community organizations like Boys and Girls Clubs, YMCAs, take their available time, post it to a marketplace, and allow you to search for those spaces and book them.
This is the Language of Business, a weekly podcast to inform and inspire entrepreneurs and anyone thinking about a startup. Learn about strategies that work and strategies that don't work. I'm executive producer Don Kelly. Our host is Greg Stoller, Harvard MBA and senior lecturer at Boston University Questrom School of Business. On this episode, we look at businesses starting from scratch. Here's Greg.
Thanks, Don. If at first you don't succeed, try again is easy, right? But does that work in business? Janine O'Neill is founder of JO Social Branding, and welcome to the Language of Business.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
Your company almost failed. How did you save yourself?
Well, in the very beginning, I was just doing everything I possibly could.
If at first you don't succeed, try again is easy, right? But does that work in business? Janine O'Neill is founder of JO Social Branding, and welcome to the Language of Business.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
Your company almost failed. How did you save yourself?
Well, in the very beginning, I was just doing everything I possibly could do to get my name out there. So actually, when I told a friend of the family that I was going to be launching my business, he said, be ready to just hit the pavement hard and knock on doors and do everything that you can. So I was. I was blogging twice a week. I was speaking for free at local organizations and communities around the area. I was teaching at the local community college. I mean, any way that I could show who I was and what I was about and to bring clients in. And then I was on all the social media channels as well. And I just felt like I was hitting this wall. Like I was doing everything that I possibly could, but there was a disconnect that was happening and I didn't know what it was.
How did you then save everything and then quadruple in size?
Well, what had happened was I had built my own website because I didn't want to hire a web designer. I didn't have the money to hire a web designer, but I knew I needed a presence. So I'm pretty tech savvy and I thought, I can build a website. I can train myself on WordPress. I can do this. I wasn't using professional headshots because once again, I couldn't hire a photographer and had pictures of my own network that I was just using. So what ended up happening was about a year and a half in, I felt, this is good. This is where I want my website to be. And a friend of mine who's a web designer came up to me and told me, no offense, but your website is not good at all. Of course, because he's a web designer. But he said, no, the presence that you're putting out there into the world isn't reflecting the level of service that you're offering. And that really made me open my eyes thinking, oh my gosh, I need a website. So good sales pitch for him because I ended up hiring him and he did my website over. I hired a professional photographer because I figured at that point we're going to go all in with it. And 2 months after my site launched, my business quintupled. So that was the missing link. I had been putting my name out there in every way that I possibly could, but I was in some ways putting the wrong brand message or branding on my website.
Are you concerned this could happen again?
I don't think so, because that was a big lesson that I learned, but I've taken those lessons and I've applied it to my own clients and the people that I work with and helping them make sure that their branding and their marketing and their social media is properly saying who they are, what they're about, and how they can help their clients.
Who are some of your current clients?
So I actually have a real estate team that I was working with, and it's a brother and sister-in-law team. When I first met with them, they told me that they have this dog. It's a ceramic dog outside of their office that they dress up. And they thought it was really funny, but people really responded well to this. What ended up happening was the dog was Dognap, which is a little concerning for me because it's become this brand mascot. And we just went on social media. We went on their Facebook page and asked the audience if they had seen Dottie around. The post was shared 392 times and reached 18,000 people. This real estate team has less than 300 people on their page, so it really kind of took this viral effect. And the dog was returned 3 days later, we believe, by the people that stole it. So we did a Facebook Live video, and that video reached 10,000 people and had 5,000 views. And we just simply thanked everybody for returning the dog. The next week, they got two listings on the market that equaled $1.4 million combined, which doubled their current listing. So just being in tune with their marketing and knowing how to work it worked really well for them.
Any other examples?
So the other client that I have is a hotel. And they are not a new client. They're not a new business. They've been around for about 30 years. And they had a new hotel move into town. So they were getting a lot of attention. There was a lot of media that were following up on them. And everybody in town was excited for this year-round hotel. And this hotel that I'm working with was seasonal. So they hired me with their email and social media. And they knew who their clientele was. There was women between the ages of 45 and 55 that were booking to stay. They wanted a younger demographic so that they could extend the life of their business. I got them on Instagram because I knew that that's where their audience was. And they had a very visual aspect to their business. They were on the ocean, they had a pool, they had a cafe, they had beautiful gardens. And I knew that we could represent them on Instagram and reach that audience. And what ended up happening was within 30 days of getting them on Instagram, the analytics and the insights on the back end was showing that they were reaching that audience, the 25 to 34.
Looking back on it, do you think that you shouldn't represent yourself when doing social marketing?
If you are not comfortable with it, if you don't like social media, if you have any hesitations about it, then I would hire it out to the experts. So either, you know, outsource it or bring somebody in-house that can help you with it, because it can be a really painful process, but it's very powerful as well. And everybody should have some sort of presence online.
Janine, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Janine O'Neill, founder of JO Social Branding.
Coming up, video games that are fun for your kids and help them stay healthy. You're ready to say, let's do this for your weekend pickup game, but you don't have a gym to use. Here's someone to call. But first, managing a lawsuit on the cloud when you're not even a lawyer, as the language of business continues. Here's Greg.
Thanks, Don. Everything seems to be on the cloud these days, but is it possible to outsource a lawsuit? Cash Butler has an opinion or two on that subject. He is founder of Clara Legal, and welcome to the Language of Business.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
You guys specialize in vendor management. What is that?
We manage vendors for large-scale litigation. We match corporations and law firms with the service providers or vendors that they need to do their work. It's challenging in today's environment because it's hard to identify the service providers. It's hard to scope the work. It's not just price, but it's the value of the work that you need to get done so you can pursue your litigation or compliance needs.
How do you find the cases?
We sell. We go into vendors. We sell to corporations, their inside counsel, CFOs. We go to law firms for litigation partners and tell them what we're doing, tell them how we can save money, save time, be more efficient, how there's no infrastructure costs, hence the cloud-based service that we provide. We then go to vendors and they're referred into the community and we vet them thoroughly, so then we connect them. And our corporations and law firms can select preferred vendors as a comparator when they're reviewing the blind bids.
Why are your services important to general partners of law firms?
Well, they're important to law firms, the litigation partners, so that they can reduce the cost of their end client, they can generate more business, be a much of a more of a business partner and a collaborator than just passing through costs. They have a fiduciary obligation to take care of that money that the corporations are spending on litigation. In addition, the corporations, the general counsel, and the CFO are under tremendous pressures to keep costs down. So when they find inefficiencies or a way to do this, they jump on it. So this is a real huge value to both the corporations and the law firms, and the vendors get the work. So win, win, win.
But you're not selling widgets and you can't ask somebody to create a lawsuit. How do you optimize your timing?
Well, it's always a challenge. But we use marketing. We have content marketing strategy. We're pushing out not just emails, but things that add value to our customers, short bursts. We do some inside sales. It's always good to be at the right place at the right time in any business, let alone this one. We strive to keep top of mind. When someone has a litigation, the first person they want to call is Claralegal, and we're going to help them out. We're going to find them the best vendor for the best price and the best value, and they're going to have a successful outcome.
Before Claralegal, how was discovery done?
By getting on the phone or the yellow pages, the internet, trying to find a vendor that can do your work, maybe calling some buddies and, you know, hey, who'd you use the last time? But there was no real competition. It's a very fragmented market and murky. We bring transparency, efficiency, standardization to this marketplace. So, you know, vendors can execute the work more efficiently. Buyers, corporations, and law firms get a better price. They save money with efficiencies. We've saved people over 50% on a pretty continuous basis of what they had previously been paying.
You're not a lawyer. How do you speak the right language?
Well, I've been working with lawyers for 15 years now. And actually, my younger brother, Mark, is a managing partner of a law firm as well. So I got some family connections there. But I also hire lawyers. You know, they're in the club, so to speak. They can speak the legal lingo. What we're doing is more IT related. It's more technology and process and operations. The lawyering is done by the law firm and the general counsel. We do those things like, you know, collect data off of cell phones or laptops or email servers, contract management databases. We do the technical stuff, and then we bring project management structure so that the lawyers can worry about lawyering, and we can supply them with what they need when they need it.
Is your secret sauce applicable to other industries?
This is a business that scales tremendously. I've been contacted for homeowners associations that want to buy plumbers and electricians and gardening people and roofers, and they're generally not professionals at this. So they sit in a board meeting and they have to review reams and reams of paper to try to figure out what's going on. We can make that much more efficient for them. It works for, it could work for business services. It can work for all kinds of stuff.
Cash, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Cash Butler, founder of Claralegal.
Video games that are fun for your kids and help them stay healthy. And you're ready to say, let's do this for your weekend pickup game, but you don't have a gym to use. Here's someone to call. Coming up next on The Language of Business. Our sponsor is Art Lifting. If you have a small business, or even if you run a Fortune 500 company, you can uplift the look of your office with Art Lifting. Art Lifting has over 1,300 artworks in a variety of styles and prices. You can buy them or rent them and switch them up on a rotation every month or so. But wait, there's more. All of the Art Lifting art is by artists who are homeless or dealing with disabilities. So you not only brighten and uplift your office, you're helping local communities across the USA. To learn more and view the collection, go to artlifting.com. Once again, here's Greg Stoller.
Thanks, Don. You followed through on your dream of starting your own company, and now it's your sole source of income. What happens next? Nikita Varani, you followed through on your dream of starting your own company, and now you followed through on your dream of starting your own company, and now it's your sole source of income. What happens next? Nikita Varani is co-founder and CEO of WISDI, and welcome to The Language of Business.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
What is WISDI?
WISDI is a startup that believes in gaming for good. We leverage the engaging nature of games to empower people to take ownership of their health and lives. We're creating mobile games to tackle things like asthma, food allergies, and other chronic conditions. Think Pokemon Go, but for chronic conditions, basically.
And is this your sole source of income?
Yes.
And how's that working out for you?
It's working out really well for me. I'm a recent graduate from Boston University, so at a young age of 24, I don't have very high costs, and I think it's worth taking the risk and the cut pay and salary to do what you love.
You've done a number of internships before co-founding WISDI. What did that teach you?
I learned leadership skills. I learned the importance of efficient and effective communication, the importance of building a strong team and teamwork.
What do you guys talk about every day in your strategic planning meetings?
We talk about game design, we talk a lot about engagement. How do we get people to play our games, engage with them, and how do we get them to stay longer? And then secondly, we talk about, most importantly, how we balance knowledge and learning with play and fun. And that's one of the most challenging aspects of making educational games.
Is it just you and your co-founder, Sean, in a room, or other members of your team present?
We have our entire team present for all of our meetings, aside from anything that's super confidential. So we're all part of the discussion. We talk about the game. We talk about how we're making money. We talk about our strategy with pharmaceutical and insurance companies. I like to get everyone's foot in the door and everyone talking about the important things.
How much do you rely on your advisors?
We rely really heavily on our advisors. They bring a lot of strong contacts, which are hugely beneficial. They bring a lot of knowledge, experience, and I think they help guide us in the right directions.
Are they sitting in on those same meetings?
They're not sitting on those same meetings, but they're kept up to date on what we're doing, and we have separate meetings that usually only I go to update them on this quarter is what we've worked on, and this is what we hope to accomplish next quarter.
How much time do you spend running the company versus raising money?
Depends on the time of year. When you're raising money, it's 60-40 with 60 fundraising, 40 company. When you're not raising money, it's still like 60-40 opposite maybe. So you're always keeping in touch with your investors.
And how are you going about raising money from investors?
Currently, we're going to our same investors for a re-up. We just pivoted our business model, so we're asking for a little more to cover what we need to accomplish to get to our next benchmark goal. And then from there, we will be going to other investors as well.
And are you raising money from venture capitalists, convertible notes, or some other method entirely?
So far, convertible note with angel investors, going forward, probably equity.
What are your hopes for the company 6 to 12 months from now?
6 to 12 months from now, I see us being having revenue, not being profitable, having a team of probably 4 to 5 people. Right now, we're at 3. And having at least 3 to 4 games out. Right now, we have 2 games.
How will you ultimately consider yourself to be successful?
I consider ourselves to be successful on the impact that we can create through our games. So that impact is how we're keeping people, especially children, healthier, how we're improving chronic condition management, and just making people live healthier, happier lives.
How much do you rely on focus groups or customer interactions?
Heavily. We do play tests when we're working on children's games at 4 different Boston public schools. We talk to parents pretty occasionally. Every time we have a survey, we'll do Skype interviews. We interact with patients to collect data.
You have 3 people on your team. How do you divide and conquer in terms of the daily tasks?
We all have very different skills. My co-founder, Sean, studied computer science at Tufts University, so he leads all our technical aspects, and he also leads all our art and musical aspects since he's an artist at heart. I lead all our business and strategy aspect, fundraising and legal. And then Dylan leads more on game design and intern management for other computer science interns.
If you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and you're thinking about your company, what is the first thought that goes through your head?
Depending on the night, but lately it's been mostly on our strategy and our interactions and relationships with pharmaceutical and how we can shorten the length of time it takes to get revenue.
Are you ever able to shut it off at night or on the weekends?
No. It's something you're constantly thinking about. It's like, I don't have a kid, but I've heard parents think about their kids all the time. So it's the same thing. You're always thinking about, oh, what can I do to make it better? How can I get revenue faster? How can I get to the next round? How can I expand? How can I scale?
Nikita, thank you.
Thank you.
Nikita Virani, co-founder and CEO of Wisdy.
Still to come, you and your friends are ready to say, let's do this for your weekend pickup game, but you don't have a gym to use. Here's someone to call as the language of business continues.
Frustrated that your weekend pickup league has no place to play? Mike Scheffler might be able to help you. He is founder of Spaces to Go, and welcome to the language of business.
Thank you for having me, Greg.
What is Spaces to Go?
So Spaces to Go is a marketplace for recreational spaces. We partner with community organizations like Boys and Girls Clubs, YMCAs, community centers, sports complexes, and we basically take their available time, post it to a marketplace, and allow you, the consumer, to search for those spaces and book them.
And are they providing it to you free of charge, or are they renting it to you and then you're subleasing it to somebody else?
They provide us with all of their available space. If someone happens to book, we take a percentage of that booking fee.
Is this informal or is it done by contract?
It's done by contract. We have facility partners that we have contracts with, and then the process is pretty much how we would normally go booking a space, just with more options for the consumer. You would fill out a rental agreement, transmit it through our website, the facility would sign it, and you would be ready to go.
What happens if the same space from week to week doesn't have availability?
Then there are other options out there. That's the purpose of this platform. You might be booking your weekly pickup game in the same location, and then it's not available. We are looking to provide a resource for you to find all the available spaces in the greater Boston area.
Is this initially just local, or are you looking to go statewide as well?
Mostly the suburbs of major cities, so greater Boston area inside the 128 loop, and then looking at New York City, San Francisco, Chicago, other big cities and the suburbs surrounding them.
Why can't the facilities rent the space themselves?
A lot of them, like a Boys and Girls Club, for example, only has a couple employees, and they want to devote their time to programming and to serving kids. They don't have the expertise to market it or the time. So that's where we come in. We help them offload those duties, and we basically make their space available to as many people as possible at a pretty cheap price.
What's to prevent somebody from calling the facility directly and just doing the booking without involving you guys?
That's the trick of a two-sided platform. So our challenge is to basically provide as much value to those facilities so that they're incentivized to draw those bookings through the platform. So if you call a facility, they say go to spaces2go.com, it's much easier this way.
You're a former athlete. How did this idea come to fruition?
That's right. I used to be a basketball player. I was a trainer and a coach. So I've experienced the problems of searching for spaces, not finding the price that I need or the times that I need. And also on the flip side, I've also helped volunteer at a local Boys and Girls Club that had a new basketball gym that was coming in, and they were desperately looking for people to fill it. So I've experienced the need on both sides of the platform.
You're currently solo, you're chief cook and bottle washer. How do you build a business from scratch by yourself?
You rely on your network. Mass Challenge has been great for that. They've provided us with mentors, advisors. We have interns working, we have people working part-time. So at the early stages, you kind of cobble it together, but as you gain momentum, you're able to get more full-time commitment.
Do you ever think the business will grow large enough that you need to bring in professional management to run it?
Well, that's the case with a lot of startups. Some of them get to a point where they've done a good job growing the business and validating the market, and then they need someone to come in from the outside and take it to that next level of scale. We'll see if that's the case. My goal is to take it as far as I can with the talents that I have.
How are you financing the business right now?
So we have a bit of seed funding through Mass Challenge. We have next to no expenses, so office space is free, hosting is free, and the marketing that we're doing that we're paying for and hiring interns are the only expenses that we have. Bootstrapping is the word at this point in this business.
Sounds like a great business, probably not IPO material. What are you viewing as your exit strategy?
Right now, we're just trying to grow this into the biggest business that it can be. We have some targets for companies that could potentially work alongside us or potentially acquire us. But right now, we have our heads down working and trying to build this into the biggest business that can be it on its own.
Instead of going facility by facility, would you consider partnering with, say, LA Fitness or a chain that has a consistent amount of space in more than one location?
Yep, so that's the name of the game in two-sided platforms, is finding the channels where you can reach the most number of customers. So right now, that's why we targeted YMCAs, Boys and Girls Clubs, sports complex chains, because we can reach more facilities with less effort. So definitely more commercial real estate is something that's in the near horizon for us.
You're a recent MBA graduate, you're the business guy. Who does the coding for you?
We have an intern that came in and did a lot of the coding. We had some of it done through contract work, and right now we have a CTO who's taken over. He's the director of engineering for McGraw-Hill, and so he's offered to take leadership on the product part-time. We also have a development intern coming in.
How can you ensure you're both speaking the same language?
That's the challenge. So there's a learning curve on the business side. So that's the challenge for me, is to learn what I can to be able to relate to our developers, but also relying on advisors and mentors who have a lot of experience building products like this.
Mike, thank you.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Mike Scheffler, founder of Spaces to Go.
Thanks, Greg. We publish a new episode of The Language of Business every Tuesday. We're available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and tune in and Google Play and Stitcher, or just say, Alexa, play The Language of Business.
Searching for latest episode of The Language of Business. Here it is from my cast.
We have downloads in 21 states and now in 22 countries. Picked up 4 in the last week. United Arab Emirates, Afghanistan, Japan, and South Africa. Thank you for the support. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do so. It's free and there's no obligation. Our director is Mark Mandel. Social media by Jennifer Powell of ExcellentWriters.com. Consulting producer is Helen Tierney of Happy Accident Productions. Audio editing and voiceover by yours truly. Special thanks to Mike Carruthers of SomethingYouShouldKnow.net. For Greg Stoller and the entire team, I'm executive producer Don Kelly. Thanks for listening to The Language of Business.